Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And coming up in a little bit, after 3:30, we're going to be talking with magician David Parr, a good buddy of the show. He's hosting his annual Haunting History Tour. It takes a sophisticated look at the supernatural, and we'll tell you all about that. Plus, he appeared on Penn & Teller's Fool Us, and actually fooled Penn & Teller. It was a great episode, and we're going to have David on. We're going to talk about that as well. We're going to talk about catchphrases, too, coming up on the show. Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. It's also a talk and text line. And follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Well, it's that time. It's our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got, as always, lots of TV to talk about. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad. Lots to talk about. As usual.
Ain't there always.
Yes, absolutely. I guess we should start with, you have seen season two of Stranger Things, and obviously that's going to be binged all over the world starting on Friday, and I'm going to be one of those people. So what did you think?
I have indeed seen all 9 episodes of the second season, and I would say that for the most part, I really, really enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it in many or most of the same ways that I enjoyed the first season, mm-hmm. which is to say that I don't think this is a show that is great art or deeply complicated drama or even rich mythological television in the sort of Lost vein. On the other hand, I think it is scary. I think it's fun. I think the young cast is just terrific, and I think that all carries through in the second season. There's really no conspicuous sophomore slump or bloat or any of the things that you worry about coming in the second season of something that had so much hype in the first.
Yeah.
It mostly escapes a lot of the bad things you might fear.
Are they all 1-hour episodes?
They vary. I think the longest is 1 hour, and then I think there are a couple that are in the 40 to 45 minute range. There's some flexibility to the time, but they are, they're roughly episodic drama length.
So let's say I can probably do this in 8 hours, get it done in like 8 or 9 hours.
I mean, if you commit to it fully without any question, if it is the thing that you do for 8 hours, you could be finished probably, and I would say about 7:30. So that gives you an extra 30 minutes to go to the bathroom, to microwave some nacho cheese,
right,
to go with the tortilla chips, whatever your
right
poison is, it gives you a little bit of time. But yeah, it's as fast. Well, okay, wait. No, so it's 9 hours.
9 hours.
So,
okay.
Episodes, rather. So, but yeah, no, it goes as quickly as you want it to. There is a little bit of table setting at the beginning where you have to remember where the characters are. You have
yeah
to remember what the legacy of the first season was, etc. But I would say by the second, third, and fourth episodes, the cliffhangers ending each episode are good enough that the chances of you not just going into the next episode are almost nothing.
Yeah, are viewers going to go nuts trying to see all the homages?
I would say it feels a little either less conspicuous in the first season, or perhaps because the first season was so heavily dedicated to everyone noticing all the homages, etc.
Yeah.
That there maybe is a little less work to it this time. There are some very, very obvious things. The most obvious, there are a couple early episodes that are heavily influenced by Gremlins. You have a pretty hefty influence, for whatever reason, it being a great movie, being, I guess, a good enough reason, of Aliens. There's at least one direct quotation of Aliens. Paul Reiser joins the cast this season.
Ah.
He's automatically a quotation to Aliens, etc.
Right.
There's some of that, but I definitely, you will notice things because it is heavily influenced still. But I think knowing what's coming, it makes it less sort of the guessing game that
sure
the first season was, where you were just going through your bingo play card and
right
going, okay,
right.
I think because you filled out the card the first time around, it isn't as necessary this time.
Okay, it's funny because the thing about this show, and I you can agree, it came out of nowhere last year. I mean, nobody knew I didn't know who the Duffer Brothers were, except for Winona Ryder and Matthew Modine. I didn't know anybody in the cast. and it just became this phenomenon. And I'm wondering how culturally if there's going to be any kind of backlash, because there will be.
And I think, I think there definitely will be. And I think a lot of it will come from the fact that people don't get to discover this in the same way. And the process of discovering something is almost always a process of perhaps over-elevating it because you're sort of over-elevating it for yourself. And
right.
I think that the idea that Stranger Things was this great show seems like an overstatement. But if people could just settle in and go, okay, the first season was just a really good, really fun, really satisfying season of television.
Yeah.
I think this is very comparable, and it didn't let me down, but I guess my expectations are lower than some people's might be. So I did not feel at all let down by this. I think probably people who have elevated Stranger Things into a pantheon in which maybe it doesn't necessarily belong might be a little bit, but it's just really fun television. The kids are all so good. There are a few new cast members, and they all fit in perfectly. And, it's just impressive that they keep adding these young, inexperienced actors who you've never seen before, and they all just fit right in. There is no sore thumb, for the most part, sticking out in any of these episodes where you go, well, they blew it that day in the casting office, and there's none of that. And I think that's perhaps the most admirable thing about the show, is that this just is such a natural cast. Both the people you didn't know before, and you totally should have known David Harbour before as well. I mean, he was a busy character actor.
Right.
But the kids are all so good, and none of them have gone into that horribly awkward phase where you can't watch them anymore. It's on good footing for right now, and I was pleased with how much I enjoyed just jumping back into the world.
That's great. I'm looking forward to watching it. And obviously, these kids came out of nowhere, but the breakout star was obviously Millie Bobby Brown. And does she get to do more in this season than the first one?
I would say she gets to do comparable amounts. There is some separating of 11 from the rest of the cast, and for some people that'll be probably a minor disappointment because you want to see her interacting with all of the gang the whole time, and that's not really what it is. It's not like we jump right in and they're all together and they're together for 9 episodes. But no, she is definitely, you won't think less of her. I think probably the honest answer is that the character, because she's becoming somewhat more accustomed to the world and somewhat more normalized, there isn't the same revelatory quality to her sort of viewing everything with fresh eyes, which was so wonderful about the performance in the first place.
Right.
And that's in no way her fault that suddenly, to some degree, Eleven is becoming a somewhat normal girl, except for the fact that she can still move things and she still gets problematic nosebleeds. So, she is excellent still. The character is simply evolving.
Okay, outstanding. Really good to hear. I know a lot of people right now are very excited to hear positive things about it. And I am really disappointed that The Deuce is coming to an end.
It happens.
I know, but it's just like you said before, you said, it's the last episode is Sunday. I can't believe this.
and that was my feeling when I was watching all the episodes before the season started as well, that it got to the point where it ended, and I was like, okay, well, now give me the rest of the episodes and give me a full darn season of TV. Don't give me this short little HBO-y season of TV, but it's short and it's what it is.
Yeah.
And thankfully, again, it's been renewed. So the fact that Sunday's finale is not a satisfactory series finale, and since it isn't, that's okay.
Okay, yeah. I just want to. There are a couple of things I just want to say about it. One, some of the stuff in that show, I can't believe they get away with. Like in terms of content, I mean, my God, the most explicit sex I've seen anywhere in something that's not pornographic. Kind of. But the other things that I want to mention really quickly, there is a scene, and I can't remember, it was 2 episodes ago, I think, with Method Man and Maggie Gyllenhaal, and they're basically walking down the street. He's trying to convince her to come along with her. That's one of the best acted scenes I've seen on TV all year, between the two of them. They were both so great. I mean, they're both really good on the show, obviously, but that scene just stood out to me as some of the best acting I've seen, and those two people were amazing.
Maggie is always excellent, and Method Man, you know, David Simon knows how to use him at this point.
Yeah.
And he is a charismatic and compelling figure, and has been since, you know, his Wu-Tang Clan days, and kind of tapping into what he does well hasn't always been something that TV shows and movies have been able to do, but definitely David Simon knows how to do it.
No question about it. Between this and The Wire, absolutely. And I also want to mention that my favorite character emerged in episode 7, and it was solidified by episode 7. I love Leon, the diner owner. He's like my hero in the show. And he stepped up big time in episode 7. I mean, God, I was so shocked at what happened. I'm in my apartment watching alone. I went, "Oh my God."
It's just a great slow burn. It's a great character slow burn for a character who has been just sort of under the radar.
Yeah.
Watch how he's interacting with this very strange clientele that he has at his establishment. And
right.
He obviously has cultivated this clientele. And sometimes when you deal largely to pimps and hoes, you know, you might get a little agitated by the people in your establishment.
A little agitated. That's an understatement. Yeah. Okay. All right. Dan, hang on. Okay.
For sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. Nice preview to Stranger Things Season 2. That starts streaming on Friday on Netflix, and Dan liked it, so we're all looking forward to that this weekend. All right, we're going to take a break for the news, and when we come back, we got more TV talk with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. And again, you can follow him on Fitter. Fitter? That's this new – it's a new thing that I just invented. Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, we're back. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Tribe Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up after the 3:30 news, magician David Parr is going to join us to talk about his Haunting History Tour, which he does every year. Always a lot of fun. And we have to talk about his appearance on Penn & Teller's Fool Us. And we'll talk more with David coming up a little bit later on. We're going to talk about catchphrases, memorable catchphrases, and much more. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. 1 hour, 3 songs. 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is with us for his biweekly appearance. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got lots of TV to talk about. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, let's jump into some of the stuff that you were reviewing. Ryan Hansen Solves Crimes on Television is the name of a show on YouTube Red.
Ryan Hansen Solves Crimes on Television is the name of a show, and YouTube Red is the name of a thing that you can watch shows on.
Right.
And as for which thing is more likely to confuse people, unclear. YouTube Red is, of course, YouTube's pay service, and you get some things commercial free, and you also get access to YouTube programming, which for the most part has been, I would say, of limited quality, but they're kind of trying. And so last week or 2 weeks ago, they premiered something called Lifeline, which is produced by The Rock, so, you know, pretty big name there.
Yeah.
And stars Zach Guilford from Friday Night Lights, and it's a strange time travel type thriller, and it's not great, but it's at least interesting, and so that's a start. And Ryan Hansen Solves Crimes on Television is about actor Ryan Hansen, who some people will know and love from Party Down and Veronica Mars, and then some people will have never seen before, and I think that's sort of the level of fame that he has. And the conceit of the show is that the LAPD, in an effort to get access in certain corners of Los Angeles, is teaming up kind of mid-level celebrities with actual police detectives to try fighting crime. And so Ryan Hansen, playing himself, is paired up with a no-nonsense cop played by Samira Wiley from Handmaid's Tale and Orange is the New Black. She is not a huge television fan and therefore has no idea who Ryan Hansen is. And they go around simultaneously solving increasingly grisly murders and also filming their investigation for a TV series that will then be airing on YouTube Red, which everyone has to constantly explain every time they mention it, is not in fact a porn channel and is the pay service from YouTube. So it's all very, 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 very meta, very up its own rear, and it is smartly up its own butt, and I have to at least give it credit that if you are a certain kind of person who is a TV lunatic and obsessed with all things television, and I certainly am, and I think you to some large degree probably count as one as well, it's full of in-jokes and references and kind of truths about the industry that are relatively true and relatively funny. And so if you get beyond the fact that the investigations aren't really all that good and that every episode could probably have 5 to 10 minutes trimmed from it and a bunch of other stuff, it looks pretty cheap as well. Definitely doesn't look like it costs TV money. But I laughed really a lot at it, and sometimes that's enough.
Yeah. Okay. And is it streaming now?
It is streaming now, and I don't have YouTube Red, so I've seen the 3 episodes that were sent to critics, and that's how many I've seen, and realistically, how many I'm likely to see. So it is not one of those things that I would say is a reason to demand an extra $7 or $9 or however many dollars a month to subscribe to yet another thing.
Yeah.
But if you happen to, say, for example, hate commercials on YouTube, and if you happen to be a big fan of various YouTube celebrities and all of that, and you have YouTube Red already, you should definitely check it out because it is funny.
Okay. I don't have YouTube Red, but I was a huge fan of Veronica Mars, and I like him. So
he's really good. He's really good at playing this thing, this sort of likable a-hole kind of thing where, you know, the guy is entirely self-obsessed, but you believe he probably has a heart and is probably semi-decent except for the amount to which he loves himself. And that's not the biggest sin in the world, especially when people are investigating murders. And so, yeah, he does this well. Samira Wiley, I would say she seems a little uncomfortable with some of the broad comedy, but she's having fun, and you could tell that she's enjoying getting to do what she's doing. And there are a lot of very, very good kind of CND level guest starring appearances and cameos and stuff, some of which are very funny and some of which are less funny, but, you know, they come by quick. They come and go quickly.
Okay.
So it's painless and at times very funny.
Okay. I think this we can segue into White Famous. as the conversation continues here, I've watched all the episodes so far of White Famous, and your assessment. Remind everybody of your assessment on it, and I agree with you, but I find it, I don't know, somehow very watchable, and mostly to do with Jay Farrow because I think Jay Farrow is terrific in it.
I think Jay Farrow is really good. I just really wish that the show was about him and not how uncomfortable he makes white people, and that's what the show is about. A disturbing percentage of the time, and it sort of makes you go back to the fact that the show is created by Tom Kapanos, who created Californication, and it's not, you know, so it's a story that isn't his story, but that he keeps making into the story of how this young African-American comic trying to make it in Hollywood keeps making white writers and white producers and other white people do stupid, embarrassing, racist things around him because apparently he's kind of got a gravitational pull of that sort. And Jay Farrow's very good, and I think a lot of the cast is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, guest stars, Tobolowsky the first episode, Michael Rapaport a couple episodes, Natalie Z from a bunch of stuff, Justified, etc., was in the most recent episode. It just feels very distanced. It doesn't feel like a personal story for anyone involved. And that kind of rankles me. And also, I thought the third episode was really broad. I thought the third episode was trying really hard to be funny, and in ways that I wasn't sure on. But I'm going to keep watching it, I think, for a little while, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to continue to watch it simply because it's nice to see Jay Farrow actually do something besides imitate Denzel Washington, which is what pretty much all he did on SNL, and to see that he's got a really strong personality, and I think he's got a handle on the character, and he's very good in it. And I thought the Michael Rapaport stuff with the blindsiding him, you know, with acting exercises was hilarious. That episode just killed me. I thought all the Michael Rapaport stuff was hilarious.
My Michael Rapaport, the season that he destroyed on Justified, has left me a little scarred on Michael Rapaport, who I used to like an awful lot and who sometimes I still do like.
Yeah.
But in my mind, he's kind of stuck. He's kind of stuck in that one season of Justified that was the one season of a great show that was really awful for some reason. And it wasn't his fault per se, but he got caught up in the... He got caught up in the whirlpool of awful, and I blame him a little bit for it, even though probably I should not. He does not necessarily deserve that. He's done enough good things in his career, but there you go.
All right. I do not watch Ray Donovan, but that got picked up for a final season. Is that right?
I'm trying to think if it was definitely picked up for, I believe, a sixth season, and they're moving it to New York, which if I watched Ray Donovan, I would probably think was this huge, horrible violation because it's such an L.A. show, such a here are these people who are not from L.A. who have found their particular place in L.A. But yes, been picked up for another season, and that is sure to make people's fathers and uncles happy. it's a big show with people's fathers and uncles, and probably many of your listeners are in fact themselves people's fathers and uncles.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's a show with a big audience. It really is. It just happens that audience is not me.
Yeah, I'm neither a father nor an uncle, so maybe that's why I don't watch the show. I have nothing. I mean, I love Liev Schreiber. I think he's great. I tried to watch it. It never really caught me.
I watched into the second season and it just wasn't doing it for me enough. And again, yeah, like you, Liev Schreiber's great. I can watch him. I can watch John Voight. I can watch a lot of the supporting characters. It didn't seem like a me show, but it has an audience, and it also gets randomly nominated for a handful of Emmys.
It does. So. Yeah. All right. BET has entered the late night comedy world. Tell everybody about the latest.
Yes, The Rundown with Robin Thede, and thank you, by the way, for the reminder that I need to tape this week's episode.
Oh, okay.
it is a Thursday night show, and it is Thursday night at 11 o'clock, and Robin Thede was the head writer on the nightly show, the Larry Wilmore show, that got canceled after a season and a half on Comedy Central. And so it is yet another people making jokes about the latest crazy things Donald Trump has done, et cetera, et cetera. But it is indisputable that she is the only African-American woman hosting a late-night show at this moment. And it happens that she has a very distinctive, very funny voice. And as a result, the first couple episodes, it's only aired two episodes, they're distinctive. They sound different from the countless other shows doing the exact same thing that I watch.
Right.
And so that's all I ask. It's only 22 minutes a week. And all I ask is don't make the exact same jokes that everyone else is making. Choose one or two other topics that maybe other people haven't covered and give them a minute or two. And in the first two episodes, she did that.
Yeah.
And that's what I look for. And so I have added her to my rotation of the John Olivers and the Daily Shows and watching various people's monologues. And I watch Jim Jeffries every week. Have you been watching that?
Yep. And I think he's great. Again, I mean, it's a format that's been recycled over and over again, but I think he's added something to it, a real distinctive voice and a style that's different. And I think he's funny.
And I think they're doing a very good job of getting into the things that he wants to talk about and giving him the chance to, even if he's just leaning back in his chair, practically at the point of falling over, of giving him the chance to be comfortable and to do things in his own way.
Yeah.
And so I think he's really good. And yeah, I think Robin Thede has thus far suggested that she's, if you want to continue to get perspectives within the late night spectrum, she's got one that's not being represented elsewhere. And so,
yeah.
And so I'm feeling good about
her
show after a couple weeks.
Okay, The Rundown with Robin Thede, Thursday nights on BET. Before we break here, I do want to mention, you know, we're talking about African-American female writers. I love Amber Ruffin. on Seth Meyers on Late Night. I think she's great, and I know she just got a deal to do a sitcom that's based on her life. Is that correct?
She is developing a network sitcom, and that I'm not sure if that will mean good things for Seth Meyers' show, but she's allowed to spread her wings and attempt to go free. I'm still annoyed that Jessica Williams hasn't had her spinoff show yet coming out of The Daily Show. There were supposed to be a couple projects she was working on after she left The Daily Show, and neither one of them has materialized yet.
Yeah.
She's very, very good, and I hope that they find a way to give her, it's all about giving people platforms.
Yeah.
All about saying, okay, we've got enough things that are exactly the same, let's do something that's a little bit different.
Yeah. And her segment on Seth Meyers, the Amber Says What, kills me. It just kills me every time. I just think I love it when he gives the bit where it's Seth can't tell that joke.
Yeah.
He brings out I can't remember the other writer's name. She's a lesbian, and obviously they're both women, and Amber is black, and so they do that series where he can't tell the punchline of a joke, but they can, and I think that's another great bit, and she's very funny on that. So I hope everything works out for her, because I think she's really funny and really talented.
I think people are realizing that, and I think that she's getting this first opportunity, and if this one doesn't work, people know. And I think one of the things about the Robin Thede show is that it's kind of like Seth Meyers, Seth can't tell that punchline gag, except that she can.
Yeah, exactly.
So she just gets to do it, and that's fine. Seth, however, he's done a great job of being aware of the jokes he can and can't tell.
Yeah.
Not just in that blatant way, but in, just in the, okay, here's a joke where it's best not coming from me, so let's, if it's a Harvey Weinstein joke that I don't feel like I'm the best person to make,
right,
let's bring out three of my writers.
Yeah,
don't do it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Seth Meyers' show. I think he does a great job, and I think he's right up there near the top of the list of people handling what's happening in Washington right now, and doing it really funny and really intelligently. I think he's doing a great job.
Definitely on the intelligently. I wish more people were as smart.
Yeah,
that is
yeah.
the best.
Yeah. Okay, Dan, hang on. Okay.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got more TV to talk about right after we take a break here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, how you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live on the Allstate, on the seventh floor in the Allstate studio in the Tribune Tower. Coming up at 3:30, after the 3:30 news, magician David Parr is going to join us to talk about his haunting history tour and much more. And let's get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk, similarly segueing into what we were talking about in the last segment, you wrote Curb, Corden, and Fallon, Do We Expect Too Much From Our Clowns? Tell everybody about that piece that you wrote.
What I wanted to do with that piece was, I was basically asked if I had an opinion on James Corden and the stupid Harvey Weinstein jokes he told at a L.A. event that he hosted a weekend ago or 2 weekends ago now, and I tried to find my approach into it, and my approach into it was basically the idea of Tom Hagen in The Godfather as being not a wartime consigliere, and the idea that different talk show hosts, some of them are best designed for a world in which nothing serious is going on, and they need never approach the world in a way that is serious or engaged, and other talk show hosts are built so that they can take on the conflicts of the day, and that, we've been hard on Jimmy Fallon because he's vapid and empty and likes to play games, and that's who he is, and the degree to which we should be blaming him for the fact that the world seems to demand more than he's capable of providing, well, if this were 5 years ago, it wouldn't be demanding it.
Yeah.
Not per se his fault, except that I can't look at him anymore. Or Corden, who got away for so long with just being the guy who had people sing with him in his car and who played games with emojis and all of that. But when things force him to attempt to be serious and to attempt to tackle issues that require cognitive thought, he's proven pretty consistently it's just not what he does best.
Yeah.
Whereas Seth Meyers is prepared for this. In a world in which all anyone wanted was fun and games in which there was nothing serious to be talking about, I don't think anyone would talk about Seth Meyers at all. But instead, we do, because he's good at what he does. And, Colbert has had to figure out who he was. So, yeah, the article is kind of going through a taxonomy of peacetime and wartime late-night consigliaries and how that has changed the landscape.
It's interesting piece. And also, every once in a while I'll tune in to Corden because he's on like right before I leave for work, and anytime he tries to do Trump jokes, it just doesn't work. I'm not a particularly big fan of his, and I also just can't stand the fact that Craig Ferguson's not on anymore, and that just makes me mad. But yeah, it's kind of painful to watch. Fallon, he tries a little bit, but the thing about Fallon is I think he's accepted the fact that he's not Mr. Political humorist, and doesn't try to do it as much as Corden does. Corden tries to do it more than Fallon does, and they both fail, but Corden, I think, fails miserably. So
it's not something he connects with, and yet they feel like they have to do it because that's what's in the water,
right.
And they feel as if they ignore it and they pretend it isn't happening, well, then they look dumb in a different way.
Right.
So instead they put thoughts and concerns that maybe do not reflect what James Corden actually feels, and so as a result he keeps ending up in these hot water situations where he has to apologize, for example, for kissing Sean Spicer after the Emmy.
Yeah.
And, you could tell that that's the kind of thing that he didn't give any consideration at all
right.
to how that would look.
Right,
and
absolutely.
And then someone said, okay, you understand this looked bad. And he's like, explain it to me. And then they explained
right.
it to him. And then he
right.
got up and he apologized.
Right.
And then blundering the Weinstein jokes a couple weeks later. But it's not what he does.
It's not what he does.
So I almost wish that there were a way that simply – Fallon could, he's tried doing a couple interviews where he said it, and he did the interview a couple weeks ago where he said that he's just not all that interested in politics, and it's his prerogative. He doesn't need to be. I don't respect it as an opinion, because when someone in the real world tells me they're not really all that interested in politics, I don't know how to deal with that kind of person
right.
either. But that's me, and I suppose there are plenty of people out there who feel as if an absence of political interest is not a damning personality
right.
trait, and
yeah.
so it goes.
Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. Always a great time to talk with Dan. We got to take a break for the news. When we come back, we've got more with Dan. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. More after the news. How you doing, everybody? Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Magician David Parr is going to join us after the 3:30 news. Got lots to talk about with him, including the haunting history tour that he does. We're also going to talk about memorable catchphrases coming up a little bit later on the show. As always, you can text us or call us at 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. You can also check us out on Facebook and stay connected there at facebook.com/Nick D Show. We're here every weekday morning, 2 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We are getting back into our conversation here with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Always great to talk with Dan about TV. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. I have no idea why I'm so giddily excited over the David S. Pumpkins Halloween special on Saturday.
I believe you know perfectly well why you are.
Well, have you seen it?
I have not. They have not sent it out. They sent me a bag of Halloween candy corn pumpkins as, to whet my appetite. But no, I have not seen it. Did you read the extensive vulture oral history of the sketch?
I have not. I saw Moynihan on with Seth, Seth Meyers, and I read a little, or I saw like I think Vulture put a little 5-minute video together.
Possible.
Which I watched, and so yeah. But what were some of the things that you that came out of that?
I think it's a very interesting article about the sketch process. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a huge fan of oral historyizing things that are only a year old. I think
right.
the oral history
right.
format. I've seen it happen on episodes from a week earlier. Like, it's now overtaken everything.
Yeah.
To me, an oral history is something where you get the gang back together 15 years later.
Right.
So
right.
let's get some introspection. But no, it's an interesting article because it traces the entire origins and nature of the sketch and almost every joke in it. And it goes back to what the original, some original Indian dance video,
yeah,
viral video
right.
from YouTube.
Right.
And then it charts it from that. And then you go, okay, well, but this really became much more of a sketch in the Chris Pine episode. And then it takes it through the different things that Tom Hanks was interested in doing. And it takes it through the different punchlines, and it takes it through sort of what the underlying thesis behind the entire sketch is. And you kind of sit back and you go, okay, I guess this is, I don't want to say more complicated than I thought it was, but it has some texture and thought behind it. And I found myself really appreciating it significantly more
yeah.
after reading the oral history.
I'll definitely give it a read for sure. And I know that he had David S. Pumpkins had much, much more of a background. There was a lot more dialogue in the original sketch that Mikey Day and Moynihan wrote. And I know that Tom Hanks wasn't crazy about it before, you know, like after Dress, he's like, I don't know about this thing. So I know I know the bullet points of what, but I will definitely read that. And I, you know, one of my favorite things ever was, and I'm trying to remember what website it was. And I don't know if it was BuzzFeed or one of those websites, went back and looked at the potato chip sketch. The infamous potato chip sketch. You remember the potato chip sketch?
I'm not sure I do.
The potato chip sketch.
I'm not sure if I saw it. I would definitely remember it.
Will Forte wrote it, and that means it's insane. And it was Jason Sudeikis and Will Forte. Jason Sudeikis was playing that, you know, the main justice thing that they did?
Yes.
When he was the judge, he plays that sort of southerner, you know, with the goatee and the, you know. Well, he plays the version of that character who is applying to be an astronaut at NASA. And this was Blake Lively was the host, and she plays Will Forte's secretary. And it's just this insane episode where Will Forte leaves the room and Jason Sudeikis eats one of the potato chips that Will Forte tells him not to eat. He comes back and counts the potato chips and sees that he had eaten his potato chip and goes nuts. So that's essentially what the sketch is. And it is a surreal, insane sketch that I find to be unbelievably hilarious. And people are so sort of fascinated by this sketch and have become obsessed with it because it's so weird. And it was an 11:50 sketch, so that's why it was so weird. And how committed Blake Lively was to it. And it's become like a topic of conversation every time Will Forte is around or Jason Sudeikis. And they've done articles about it. And I've read extensive articles about how that sketch started. And it was originally not supposed to be Blake Lively. It was somebody. It was the week before the female host, the week before who did it. They did it in Dress, and it did terribly. And so that's I love reading about the history of these sketches, and that one in particular is pretty fascinating.
Well, have you been watching Last Man this season?
Have I been? I'm sorry. Have I been watching what?
Last Man on Earth this season.
Oh no, I haven't.
You should be. Everyone should be watching.
I know. I know.
It's a weird and off-putting show in a very good way.
Mm-hmm. No, I love Will Forte,
and it's very Will Forte-y.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah, and I've got a bunch of them on the DVR, and I'm way behind on that, and that's something that I have to catch up with. No question about it. So
there's a lot of TV now.
Yeah, I know. I know. Your IndieWire contribution, best scripted sports show. And you ultimately, when you answer it, you know, because you mentioned some sports related episodes of TV in the past, and I'm so glad that you mentioned Homer at the Bat, which is just genius. But it's Friday Night Lights. I mean, it's got to be, right?
I was a little annoyed that a few people attempted to outsmart the question or outstupid the question or whatever it is. Yes, there was only one answer. I made up little reasons to mention The Simpsons because, you know, in 27 seasons, The Simpsons has done 20 plus darn good sports episodes.
Yeah.
So it belongs there. A Homer at the Bat being the best of them, but many other great sports episodes, mentioning things like Sports Night, of course, and you know, a little tribute to Robert Guillaume and the greatness of Sports Night and his contributions to it.
Absolutely.
Watched a lot of clips the other day of Robert Guillaume on Sports Night, and just moving and funny and great.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
But then ultimately the answer was Friday Night Lights, and there's no second place. It's a large gap.
Yeah,
if you're just talking sports shows, between Friday Night Lights and the other stuff.
I was a fan, as you were, of Pitch, which nobody watched except me and you. And I mean, obviously, I don't think it's, you know, on the same level as Friday Night Lights, nor did it have a chance to achieve that. But I thought that was a terrific sports show, Pitch, and I'm glad you mentioned that one as well.
I mentioned Pitch, I mentioned Glow, I mentioned Survivor's Remorse.
Right.
These are all shows that are very good shows about sports. It's not impossible to do good shows about sports, but there's the great show about sports, and then there's the other shows. And I think one or two people might have mentioned White Shadow, and, you know, there have been good TV shows about sports in the past, but Friday Night Lights is the best, and by a wide margin.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now, I'm looking at this. Hit the Road. Jason Alexander, what is the Audience Network?
The Audience Network is the thing formerly known as the 101 Network, and it's a part of the DirecTV general package. It's kind of DirecTV's in-house network, and if you don't have DirecTV, it is available as an over-the-top, just, you know, pay more money and you can sign up and yay. And they've done a pretty fair number of shows in recent years. They had the MMA show Kingdom, which was a pretty good show. They had Mr. Mercedes, which premiered this summer and which I liked quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they have a couple new comedies, one of which stars Ron Livingston. It's called Louder Milk, and it's about a former music critic who's an awful person, and that's what it's about. And it's decent. It commits fully to what it is. And then there's Hit the Road, which is new sitcom. Jason Alexander, once upon a time, one of the biggest TV stars in all the world.
Yep.
And now he's doing a show on a network you couldn't find, and it's also an awful show. It's kind of Partridge Family for the 21st century.
Oh, God.
And the family's last name is Swallow.
Oh, no. I can see where that's going.
Exactly. And now you know every beat of the, you know, the pilot episode involves multiple hilarious hijinks.
Wow.
Dismal, but since most people probably don't know where Audience Network is, they aren't seeking out this very bad show on Audience Network.
I'm really sorry we're ending on this note, Dan.
Let's see. Did you watch Mindhunter?
No. I have not watched it yet.
Okay, Mindhunter on Netflix. I want to give you one, because I feel like we always need to give each other you know, these Netflix projects that we have to get through.
Right.
So if you have not watched Mindhunter yet, and if you, as I know you do, like the David Fincher, and if you are a fan of, say, Zodiac, it's I don't want to say it's exactly a 10-hour version of Zodiac or Zodiac told over 10 hours.
Yeah.
But it's enough like that.
Okay.
That if you like that idea, go for it.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I could watch Zodiac for 10 hours. It's one of the most criminally underrated movies of all time. So that sounds good. Mindhunter on Netflix. I got it. It's on my queue. So,
excellent.
All right.
I had to change the subject so we didn't end on Hit the Road.
Okay.
Very important.
Good. Mindhunter. That's what we're ending the time on. Dan, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay, man?
Sounds good, Nick.
Take care, buddy. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. We're going to take a break on 720 WGN.